Welcome to episode 38 of Champagne and Snark. In this week's episode, you'll hear from Maggie Kubley of Chicago's very own Celine Neon.
One day I just like got up and pulled myself out of bed and took a shower and I looked up the nearest NA.
Stick around. This is a really important episode. Hello, this is Anna Fernat, your host of Champagne and Snark. You might know me as the writer Accidentally Sexy of that dating and relationship blog that I've surprisingly started writing on again. Congratulations to me. I have in the champagne room today Maggie of Celine Neon.
Hey there.
Hello. So you might know, Maggie as part of the duo of Celine Neon that, I don't know, electropop? What do you guys call yourself?
Yeah, it's electropop, I guess.
Electropop
or just
duo.
Pop is also fine.
Yeah.
You just call it pop.
From Chicago, they're amazing. I'm a big fan of your single Kitty.
Oh, thanks.
Love it.
Thank you.
And we've also had Maggie's partner on Champagne and Snark before, who she talked about cake decorating. So yeah. I got the whole piece.
Yeah.
So do you want to give a little brief about what people might know you about? Know you for?
I think most people know me for, like you said, I'm in Celine Neon, and then I also do different solo performances. I also kind of play piano and sing kind of more low-key confessional pop music, and then I've done different random like theater projects throughout the city with other various artists. I guess most notably is I'm in the Fly Honey show every year. Yeah, with The Inconvenience, which a lot of people have known me from that. And I frequently perform at Salonathon as well.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Champagne and Snark is a show where we drink champagne with interesting people and then talk to them about topics that no one else will. This episode's going to be a little different. We're going to go in a different what do I call, order than we usually do, because I'm going to bring in the topic a little earlier because it's necessary. So this Champagne and Snark is going to be a champagne-free Champagne and Snark. We're going to be drinking sparkling cider, Martinelli's very own specialty.
Delicious.
Gold medal, it says on
delicious,
the label.
Delicious, yeah.
because our topic today is going to be sobriety. I don't know how public of knowledge this is, but Maggie's been sober for 2 years now.
Yeah.
And we're going to kind of start our talk about that. But before we even get into that, I just need to set that up. We're going to start with a toast. So I'm going to get this started.
All right, great. Which, if you don't know, we're just cracking open this bottle with a regular bottle opener. Oh, yeah, it still has a little bit of a sound. It's not as cool as a bottle popping, but admittedly.
We start the show off with a toast. Toast to you, Maggie. I'm really excited to get to know you better.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Delicious.
It's good, right?
Actually, that is really good.
It I haven't had that in a while. I know. People, I have a really good friend, Holly, who is so wonderful. And every time we are like at a dinner or anything and somebody's like, it's supposed to be BYOB, she always shows up with a bottle of this. And I'm always kind of laughing. But then anytime I actually start drinking it, I'm like, this is actually really good.
Kind of great. Yeah. Yeah, there was tons at my Jewel for some reason. Okay, so we do start the show with a champagne history. So even though you've been sober for 2 years, you do have a champagne history before that, I assume.
Of course.
What do you have any associations with it, or do you remember the first time you ever had champagne?
I mean, I know it sounds cliche, but I think I definitely always associate champagne with New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
And I think for a while I was like kind of a... I know there's been a few shows where we, you just drink champagne straight from the bottle, and that always felt really cool to me.
Yeah. I know. There's something about that that just feels like decadent and powerful.
It really does feel powerful. Like, yeah. I won't even lie, when you're just kind of swagging around with a bottle and just drinking out of it. I mean, it feels good.
Yeah. I do like that. I've had a couple people say that.
It does.
Yeah. So, this is a show where we drink champagne today, sparkling cider with interesting people. We drink sparkling cider with interesting people and talk to them about topics that no one else will. And instead of just going directly into Maggie and her incredible music career, we're going to talk about the sobriety and how that kind of plays into your everyday. So I guess the first question and the most obvious question is why?
I guess the first thing I should say is like, it really, I think when you hear the word sobriety, most people think about drinking.
Right.
And drinking wasn't necessarily my problem. Mm-hmm. I had smoked weed for a really long time. Mm-hmm. I mean, once I'd smoked weed for a while. And that was primarily, which is hilarious because that was primarily my issue, is I was just basically high all the time.
Right.
Which I know a lot of people who are just pretty much high 24/7 and lead very fulfilling and wonderful lives.
Right.
And I think that's why marijuana is a really slippery slope. Because I think too, when you tell people, like, I feel like I have a problem with compulsively smoking marijuana. Mm-hmm. People are like, it's, you know, it's not a drug. Like, I'm sure you're fine. Like, it's no big deal. And you're like, no, but like, seriously, like, I am not functioning in my everyday life.
Right.
I'd gotten to the point where I was basically just high all the time. And then I started just basically trying to do whatever drug I could get my hand on.
Right.
And I did that for a couple years, and it finally just got to the point where it was really aggravating my depression a lot. And mm-hmm. so I was just like, I just wasn't doing anything. I was just laying around a lot. I was feeling really sad a lot.
Yeah.
I was gaining weight. Mm-hmm. And like, if you know anything about me, it's like, you know, I stay pretty busy and I'm always trying to accomplish a lot. And so trying to accomplish a lot and like being totally stoned and like on drugs 24/7 was like really not yeah. The combination, surprisingly, it didn't work, honestly. You know, you'd think it would be. And so just the ups and downs of it eventually became more than I could handle. And I kind of started to hate myself and feel really lonely mm-hmm. and super alienated. And so one day I was just like, I can't, like, I really just had gotten to the point where I was just like, I cannot take this anymore. And I decided to make a change.
Yeah. Did you just do cold turkey?
I didn't actually. I was actually living in Savannah at the time. I had had kind of a, let's see, I guess a couple years ago, I had a really tough fall. Mm-hmm. It was right around Pitchfork, I guess. And I was like, I'm going to get out of the city for the winter mm-hmm. and I'm going to go live down in Savannah. And I was living down there.
Do you have family there?
I do. My brother and my sister-in-law live there. And so they were like, yeah, we got a spare bedroom. Like, come down here. I mean, I was like, when I moved down, I was like, I just want to get out of Dodge. Like, I just want to get a change of scenery. It really wasn't about like cleaning up at all for me. Mm-hmm. Though I, in the back of my mind, thought it would be helpful for me to like move to a city where like I didn't have a drug dealer.
Yeah.
And so I got down there, but and didn't, you know, really clean up in the way that I think that like I really was kind of hoping. Like, nothing really got fixed.
Yeah.
And so I was down there for a couple of months, and my brother and sister-in-law were both away for the weekend, and I had just spent the whole weekend just being totally like, just like getting high, crying a lot, feeling really just displaced and like lost, you know?
Yeah.
And one day I just like got up and pulled myself out of bed and took a shower, and I looked up the nearest NA mm-hmm. and I started going to NA meetings, and I went to, they tell you to go to like one meeting every day for 30 days. Mm-hmm. And I did it. I mean, I did it because I'm like, also, what else am I going to do? Like, I have no friends. Okay. Like, I don't know anyone down here. You know what I mean? And it was really easy to do too, because like, it was such a wonderful thing, because I moved to Savannah. I got sober. I got a job at a coffee shop, and I didn't know anybody. And it was really refreshing to just be this person. Like, nobody even knew I played music.
Right. Like, trying on this new.
Yeah. It was like, I just, you know, I got up and I had a job, and I guess I was kind of boring because I didn't really drink or do drugs, and people didn't really understand that.
Right.
And, you know, it was kind of weird, you know, and it was like kind of refreshing to be able to do that and not have to, you know, have this old like personality.
Right. Like, you didn't, it was probably, or was it good to do it in Savannah because you weren't having to answer to your old or your old persona when you walk outside?
Yeah. It was just nice because I was like, you know, you guys don't, you know, I know that I'm like really dynamic and at times insanely crazy,
right?
But like, it's just, I'm so quaint here.
Right.
I'm so like super, like just not anything special here, you know? And it felt really, it was really nice.
Probably a little bit of a relief.
It was, it was just cool. And it was really a way for me to understand how to navigate, you know, like facing every single day of your life sober.
Yeah.
In a place that, you know, maybe didn't have quite as many challenges as in Chicago.
Did you do all your 30 days in Savannah?
Yeah, I did. I did all my 30 days in Savannah. I think I got like a couple of months in Savannah before I moved back. And that was nice. And the people down there were amazing. I owe so much to the complete strangers of NA in Savannah. They're people that I will never, ever in my life forget.
What was it like to walk into that first meeting?
I mean, like, it's really nerve-wracking, especially because, you know, it's not like I was, like, homeless, like, on the streets, like my problem hadn't got so out of control that like everyone around me was like, you got to do this. Like, honestly, right. when I told people that I was doing it, they were like, what? Because I was always somebody who kind of like scrolled away by myself, you know, and like would kind of just like get really like messed up by myself.
Right, right, right.
And not a lot of people really realized that, or not a lot of people really realized how chemically imbalanced I had become. Right. From, you know, just trying to stay high all the time. And so I think when you make the choice to get sober, especially when it's not something that's like, you know, people aren't aware of how much it's really affecting you.
Right.
You know, even people that love you and want you to be your best self are going to be like, do you really need to do that? Like,
right.
Is it really that big of a deal? And you're like, well, if I'm saying I think I need to do this, like, I think it is, actually. You know, it's really nice of you to weigh in on this, but I think I'm the one who probably knows best. you know, honestly, like, the nerve-wracking thing, you know, I'm realizing is, like, the nerve-wracking thing was, actually, after the first meeting, going and telling people, like, I gotta tell ya, I am not, you know, like, I'm not drinking. Like, you know, like I'm not doing it anymore. And people are always, most people, I mean, people that knew me well were like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Like, I think this is a good thing for you. But a lot of people too were like, are you sure you're not being overdramatic? You know? And you're like, I know, like, yeah, I think it's good. But the first meeting, I mean, I was so, I mean, not to be like, I'm a highly emotional person anyway, with like really huge, you know, sometimes oppressively so, like huge emotions. So, I mean, by the time I went to the meeting, like I couldn't see straight for just like, I'd been crying so much and was so like, I was just so worn out from being so distressed.
Right.
That falling into that meeting was like a huge relief. You know, like I got there and it was just two girls. It was kind of an older woman and a gal that I think was actually younger than me.
So it was a really small meeting.
It was two people. And we showed up and I don't even think the meeting happened that day like it was supposed to. Something went wrong. But these two people showed up. You know, we, the three of us kind of like, it was in a hospital. And the three of us were kind of sitting in this little waiting area, like trying to get the room open.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they were like, how are you? And I was like, like I couldn't even speak.
Yeah,
I started crying, and they're like, "You're in the right place.
Right,
come back tomorrow. You're gonna be okay. Mm-hmm. Like that, you're doing this right. Like this is good." And it did feel good to just have people who were like, "We got you."
Right,
and anybody who comes to me and is like, you know, feels out of control with their substance of choice, or feels like they want to make a change in how much, you know, in you know, anything they feel like they're just like kind of addicted to and can't stop.
Right.
I always encourage them, go to an AA meeting, go to an NA meeting, because like there's nothing better than other people embracing this kind of embarrassing thing about yourself, you know? Like it's just nice to be among like-minded people that are like,
right.
Yeah, I do that too.
To like show a vulnerability and then realize that what you were probably hiding as your vulnerability is actually not, you're not the only person doing that.
Yeah.
That must feel really good.
Oh, it feels so great. It feels so great. It just is like, especially when everyone you know, especially like being, you know, you being an artist, being a musician, everyone I know does drugs and everyone I know drinks pretty heavily.
Yeah.
And you know, you feel like you're the only one that can't make it work in your life,
right.
Which, you know, respectfully is probably not true. You know, some people probably should, you know, do less, but whatever.
Right.
But, you know, you're like, I'm the idiot that can't do it right.
Right.
You know, but it's not, you know, so it feels good to have other people be like, no, like, it's not that, you know, it's like my thing was like, I just couldn't stop. I was like, I'm miserable being so high all the time. But the first thing I did every single morning was get high.
Right.
Even though I didn't even want to, I didn't like how I would feel the rest of the day. Like I didn't like the life I was living. And I knew that like, if I could just quit you know, like trying to be high all the freaking time, I could like turn it around, but like my my brain just would not. I was just so compulsively, you know, trying to stay fucked up that like it just like, you know, it's like it ruins your life.
Are you addicted or have you been addictive in other places in your life, or was it really?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yes. I mean, now like I absolutely like all my boyfriends are like, why do you want to have so much sex? Please. Please. I'm like, come on, let's keep. Do you want to have sex again? No more. All the time. They're like, why? Like, please quit trying to have sex with me. I don't ever, you know, I'm like totally addicted to anything. Like when I meet new people, like I'm just so into them. Like crushes are so problematic and terrible for me because I mean, crushes are already, but like, you know, it's not like
it's an extreme feeling.
It's an obsessive feeling that you're just like, can I please quit thinking about this person for 2 seconds? Like food, sugar, coffee. Yeah. I have a terrible coffee addiction.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely like addiction transference.
Yeah,
for sure.
And do you think, cause it sounds like you, I mean, you were talking about how you experience your emotions really deeply and richly. Do you think that those things are connected? In the way that you feel things on a high frequency. And that's part of being an artist and being creative, right?
Yeah. I do. I'm definitely addicted to the like rush of emotion. Mm-hmm. And I think that I'm very addicted to the feeling that you get when you confess like super personal things about yourself to someone else.
Really?
Yeah. And that's why on stage, like I say, people are like, how can you say those things on stage? I'm like, because it makes me high. Yeah. Like,
interesting.
It's like the rush you get, or like being kind of inappropriate.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, like it's just,
yeah,
I feel like, yeah, the best part of human relationships are like,
The real moments
and telling people things that, you know, you don't get to ever say out loud. And then you find this person that wants to know you and you get to tell them all this juicy stuff about yourself.
Right.
That most people like will only say a handful of times in their lifetime.
Right.
You know, and so a large part of the art and music that I make is just like saying those like really raw.
That's what I was going to say. I feel like, I mean, a strength of a creative, especially someone who's like creating and performing, is to have the bravery of emotional vulnerability.
Yeah.
And so I think, I mean, like with everything, a strength is a strength at the same time as the weakness, at the same time as a weakness is a strength. Yeah. Like they're always connected. There's always like a dark side to the, to the light.
Yeah.
That's with that, we're going to take our first break.
Okay.
Hello, this is Anna Fernat, your host of Champagne and Snark. First of all, I would like to say thank you so much to the thousands of listeners we've had so far in this show. If you're new to Champagne and Snark and you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher or via your favorite RSS feeder at accidentally-sexy.com. We deliver this podcast every Thursday, hot and fresh, and I don't want you to miss a thing. So see you next week. Hello and welcome back to Champagne and Snark. I'm your host, Anna Fernat, and I am in the Champagne Room today with Maggie Kubley.
Hello.
Of Celine Dion. We've been talking about sobriety, and Maggie has been sober for 2 years. 2 years just recently, right?
Yeah, at the end of January.
Did you celebrate that anyway?
You know what? I actually was out of town for work, and I didn't really celebrate too much. I took a jog. Mm-hmm. I was in Florida, and it was really nice out.
Yeah.
And I took a jog and it was like sunset.
It feels like that's where you're supposed
to celebrate. And it wasn't lost on me. I know. Yeah. It's like, honestly though, like, I just want to say I would not have been jogging if I was like in Chicago. I would have been like, let's all go out for dessert. And I would have been like pounding like cheesecake or something. But like, it was, the place I was like super nice, like really nice. And it was really nice outside. So I was like, I guess I should go take advantage of this.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you single?
I am single and ready to mingle, gentlemen.
How do you, like, this is something that really annoys me about dating. Like, when you date, every single time you go on a date, it's like, let's go get drinks. And you get, like, tipsy. And it's boring.
Oh, my gosh.
So boring. Like, what do you do when somebody, either, like, they're like, this is what we think, I think our date idea should be. Like, how do you even approach that sort of?
You know, I try to just not bring it up. Mm-hmm. Like, I've tried a lot of different things. Like, I've tried, like, and I guess it depends on how, like, okay, you meet somebody, like, on Tinder, and then they're like, you know, you like have the Tinder miracle of actually going on a date with somebody, you know, yeah. You're like, oh my God, it's happening. They're really doing it. You know, and they're like, let's meet for drinks. Mm-hmm. I've tried being like, cool. Just so you know, I don't really drink. That didn't work so good.
Really drink usually means to the guy, it's probably like, oh, she'll have five.
She'll have, yeah, exactly. It's like, she'll stick to beer only. Which has not been super successful. Sometimes people are like, that's chill. Or if I'm the one initiating the date, I'm like, do you want to grab coffee?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. Yeah. If it's just a situation where, like, you know, I meet somebody and then they're like, yeah, let's go out, like, I will still just be like, yeah, I'll meet you for drinks. And then when I get there, you know, I'll just like, usually like either I'll get there early and just order something. So when they show up, so it I'm
looks
drinking.
Like a cocktail. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
And then, or I just, you know, don't drink. And eventually they're like, are you not drinking? And, you know, sometimes I'm like, no, I'm not. And sometimes I'm like, no, I don't drink. Mm-hmm. I try really hard not to make a big deal out of it because it is just so not a big deal to me.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it is so, you know, and other people, though, have told me, like, you know, it kind of makes them uncomfortable that I don't drink.
Really?
Yeah, at first. Yeah. Some people are like, you know, they feel a little uncomfortable about it because they feel like I really desperately want to and I can't and you are. And it's just not like that. Like, I'm like, I don't drink. I don't really want to drink either. Like, it's totally fine for you to go to town and it doesn't affect me.
And it's not like you're a boring person.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's some people that are fucking boring when they're sober.
I am super lucky in that, like, I am pretty outgoing. I'm pretty comfortable, like, being in a conversation, engaging other people comes naturally to me. Like, you know, I love to tell jokes and, like, be engaging myself. So I can totally hang sober. It's really hard to find people who will date you without drinking. Mm-hmm. And it's hilarious because, like, sometimes you feel a little bit like a creep because you like hang out and they get kind of drunk and you're not drunk. And then you're like, wait,
maybe now's the time.
Yeah, exactly. Or they'll like go, then, you know, you like, they want to hook up and like have sex with you. And you're like, should I? They've had a lot to drink. And like, it's funny because like, I feel like, you know, first I was like, I don't care, like, whatever. But then I'm like thinking of like, if one of my friends was like, yeah, then I got really drunk and he was totally sober. And then I'd be like, that guy's a jerk. What a creep. That guy's a total creep. And then I'm like, wait, am I a creep? So I'm like, yeah, you've had a few drinks. Want to come back to my place? Yeah.
Your inhibitions seem to be down.
Yeah, your inhibitions are down, babe. Why don't you come on back here? Take your shirt off. So it's kind of weird. You know, it's weird for people sometimes that I try to date. Yeah. And then at times it has also been weird for me because I feel like, you know, Bill Cosby or something.
Right.
Just kidding.
I mean, I've dated a couple sober guys, actually, and I enjoyed it because, I mean, I drink and I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
But I liked dating a sober guy because then it just brought new experiences into my life.
Because
it's like they want to do things that are interesting. And like, it's like, it's not just centered around, okay, let's get a bottle of wine always. And not that I don't love a bottle of wine, but, you know, it's nice to be able to have some like memorable times.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I'm just somebody who, like, me not drinking is not gonna have me stop you from drinking. Like, go for it. Like, I don't care if you want to drink. I don't care if you want to, like, you know, get drunk. You know, if you're gonna get plowed on our first date, like,
that's maybe,
judge seems of character. A little extreme. Honestly, like, how much, is it that bad? Like, maybe just leave. I don't know. If we're not having a, you gotta get that drunk. Like, just tell me I'm not that attractive to you. I get it. You don't need to, I can see what you're doing. But yeah, it's definitely made dating a little harder.
Yeah. What's it like performing now?
Performing is so much better because alcohol and, you know, smoking all the time, really any drugs, they really messed up my voice. Mm-hmm. It was really hard to sing, or I just would like lose all feeling and like be like, wah, you know, just like the next day I'd wake up and I like couldn't talk, you know what I mean? So again, like, I was really blessed because I know some people who you know, they really need alcohol or drugs as like a social lubricant.
Right.
They just cannot function socially without it.
Right.
And some people I know can't be on stage without it.
Yeah.
And I really lucked out because I, like I said, I really get high by being on stage, and I really get high through the type of performance that I write to do in front of other people. And so it's, yeah, I would definitely say my performance has benefited immensely from being sober. And anyone who knows me would agree, yeah. I think. I'm a lot healthier now. I'm just in better shape.
Yeah.
I lost a bunch of weight, so I just am more, I guess I would say, a little more pleasant to look at. Just because, like, yeah. You know, not to, like.
Well, you're finding your healthiest self.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, you know, people just have definitely commented on, they thought that was one of the biggest things, is that, you know, my performance has just gotten tighter.
Yeah, I think it's just like, it's interesting how to then reemerge as like your sober self. Did you feel like when you came back to Chicago, did you feel like the brand new Maggie? Or,
yeah. I was really worried about coming back to Chicago, and I had a lot of people, I think my family actually kind of wanted me to stay in Savannah.
Yeah.
Which was ludicrous to me. Once I realized that they were all kind of like thinking maybe that's what I would do, I was like, are you crazy? I would lose my mind down here. And actually all the people in NA were like, don't go back. Like, right. Don't go back to your life. Like, you're going to fall right back into your old ways. And I was really scared of that for sure. And I was also like, am I boring now? Like,
right.
Definitely for me, I started like, you know, just trying to go really hard on substance because I was bored. You know, I was bored at parties. I was bored of myself. I wanted to feel like I had something special to do that other people weren't doing. And then when I like got clean, I was like, oh man, I don't even know. Like, am I going to be boring? But like, then, you know, it's like you are the same person. There's like a big, you are and you aren't. I mean, the things about you that were wonderful and good are still wonderful and good. And now they have the chance to shine through even more.
Right.
You know,
that's what I mean, like when I do go out and I have a night when I'm just not drinking for whatever reason, I've decided not to drink. It always feels like I have a superpower.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like I'm way more interesting.
Yeah.
My wit is on 11.
Yeah.
And I remember everything and I don't feel bad the next day.
Yeah.
It's always like kind of amazing.
It's kind of chill to be able to get up the next day. But yeah, I mean, and I will say too that most people, you know, you had people that were like, oh, come on, you know, and really were trying to get me to still like drink and like party and stuff.
Yeah, those people are assholes.
I mean, eventually they either just were like, they didn't want to hang out with me anymore, or they just like, they really got it. They were like, oh, you're really serious about this. But I had a lot of people be like, you seem different. Like you just have this like glow about you. And it sounds so cheesy, but like, you know, I did have people that like, you know, they really noticed that about me. And I did. I just like, at one point I was like, oh my God, I totally forgot. I'm totally like bright and charming because when I was high all the time, I really felt like a creep. Like a lot of the Celine Dion EP, our very first EP, people, you know, like a lot of the lyrics are really seedy and they're like really like skeezy and creepy. And people are like, ew, I love how you do that. And it's because I felt like a living, breathing, like just, I felt like a creep. I felt like a gross, creepy person. Which I embraced, you know, I was just like a gross, creepy just a part perv, of it. Which I'm still totally a perv. Okay, just let's get that anybody clear. Listening out there, all you pervs, I'm with you. Because I was really hiding a lot of what I was doing, and I was making music just pretty much, you know, kind of fucked up and feeling really gross, you know, and I felt gross a lot, and I was making music to reflect how kind of gross I felt. And, you know, once I wasn't, because I was like, you know, speaking of like, you know, going to meetings and people understanding you, one thing I talked about was I was kind of like a little thief. I was like, you know, stealing like money here and there from people I knew and like, you know, just like, I won't go into details too, like, you know, but like, you know, I was kind of like, and I was a little bit of a liar. I was a little bit of a thief. I was always flaking on people.
Yeah.
I was not my best self. And I knew it, you know, for as functioning as I was, I knew that I was really kind of like doing some gross stuff on the low.
Right.
And that really led me to hate myself. And I was kind of like talking to like my NA group about it. And I was like, and you know, I didn't want to say it. And I was like, I stole some, and everybody's like, stole some things. Oh yeah.
Oh, classic. Me too. Oh, I got to tell you about the time I stole this. I was like, really? And they're like, yeah, everyone in there was like, oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. Stealing. Yeah, for sure. You're like, oh, my God. I felt so guilty and terrible about that for so long.
Yeah.
And then you get into a room of people that are like, right out of my mother's purse, babe. You know, you're like, oh, thank God. Like,
right.
I was really hating on myself. And it's just nice to know there are other people that are like, yeah, you know, you can. You can make amends with that, and you can really, you know, you can change yourself. You're not, I'm like a huge proponent of like, you really can change yourself.
Yep.
I know people that are like, nope, I'm, you know, I'm a piece of shit. I'm always going to be a piece of shit for the rest of my life. And I'm like,
right. That's somebody who wants to be a piece of
shit. Exactly. I'm like, no way. No way. Like, that is not destined.
Right.
You can change. You can totally change.
Yeah. Our actions add up.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like hard and it might take you a long time, but like you, no one is intrinsically bad. Like, like I am intrinsically like an addict. Like that is true.
Right.
But I can, you know, like use that for good and not evil and get like, you know, I can try to get addicted to things that are like healthy for me or good for other people. You know what I mean? Like there's a way in which you can make things work for you.
But yeah, you can be addicted to making really great music.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's like, you know, get addicted to like working really hard or get addicted to like being really kind or like, you know, like just it's hard, but you can make positive changes. I feel like there was a time where I was like, I will never know one day when I do not feel sad or I do not feel some sort of like self-hatred. Like I thought that was my bag in life. Like I thought I was never, ever going to know a time when I did not feel that way. I had completely convinced myself of that. And then I realized like once I was like a couple months out of like staying clean, I realized that like that like didn't actually have to be true, you know, like that I could actually like kind of change that course that I thought was completely fated for me, you know?
Yeah. So you kind of felt like you had lost a piece of yourself in becoming addicted. Is that what you're saying? Like you said, it faded. Does that mean that you feel like you had lost something like a glow that you'd had and then you found it again? Is that kind of what you're saying?
I thought it was faded in like, it was my fate, not fate.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, I definitely felt faded also and was because I was. But I mean, I really believed it was just like my fate that I was like a really sad person in life.
Yeah.
Like I was kind of like, well, God is fair. Like you make music and you make this art, but like you're also just, you're a sad person and you'll always be sad and you'll always be kind of lonely and you'll always feel really alienated. And that's your bag in life.
Right.
And then it turned out that like, no, you were just really high. Like, hate to break it to you. And I mean, too, I think with artists, a lot of people don't want to sober up because they're like, but then all my turmoil and like all the crazy things that are happening. It's like, no, you still got it. You don't just like get sober and then you're like, life is like sunshine and like, you know, like butterflies all the time. Like you still feel sad. Like horrible things still happen to you and people you know, and you still fall in and out of love and you still like deal with your own mortality and feel really insecure and like all these things like still happen to you. But I think you can just like, they don't destroy you.
Right.
You know, and I was definitely in a place where it was just like so laborious to like try to make sense of all those emotions all the time. And because I didn't want to make sense of them, I would just try to numb myself to them. And it's really hard to face life on life's terms, which is like an NA thing, but like it's really courageous too, and you feel a little bit like a badass when you're like, yeah, this is like, life is terrible right now and I cannot drink to escape it. Like that is no longer an option for me. Like I can't just like get so fucked up I pass out, which is like often what I want to do,
right?
You know, I still crave doing that, but like I just know that like I can't go back there.
And there's got to be, like you were saying, some strength to having something really terrible happen and then realizing that you've gotten through it. Like, it's going to suck when you see it and it's coming up and it's like, oh, I don't want to go over this hill. But then when you're over the hill, you're like, bye. You're
like, I did it. Yeah. It's crazy. And it's not, like I said, I think about substance abuse a lot and I crave it.
here and there. I wouldn't say a lot, but I definitely do. It's not like something that completely has left my life. I don't know. It's just like, I felt like I was somebody who would make, like I said, I would try to like make commitments that I would always flake out on them. And, mm-hmm. and this was like one of the first commitments I ever made in my life where like I actually stuck with it. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, like, and because like, you know, honestly, if I, you know, was trying to do the amount of, you know, mm-hmm. cocaine I used to kill me, you know, not saying, just saying, you know, you know, I'm just like, I can't go back there. Sometimes I really want to go back there.
Right.
But I can't go back there. And I think of all the people that like have helped me get there, get to where I am now.
Right.
And it's also like for those people, it's like for those two women that helped me on my first day, like for my brother, for Emily, for my parents, like mm-hmm. for my brother and sister-in-law, like anybody who was ever like, keep going, mm-hmm. you know, I just feel like I can't go back.
Well, I guess maybe also it's like really realizing how big your support system is, because, you know, you might yeah. have wanted to like go to drugs before, but now you can go to your friend and your brother and your sister.
Yeah. You know. And I mean, it's hard too. Like, you can go to people. And I think that was the reason is I was just like so like self-medicating for so long, is because I just didn't feeling anything really is very vulnerable.
Yep.
To admit to anyone that you are actually feeling something.
Oh God, it's hard.
It's crazy. It's vulnerable. So it's so funny. Cause like I said, I will do that to a room of complete strangers, yep. and I'm totally down for it.
I'm way more comfortable
Ooh, yeah.
telling a story than mm-hmm. I am like telling somebody I'm dating
one-on-one. Yeah. But one-on-one to call somebody and be like, I feel sad right now.
Yeah.
Feels really, you know, vulnerable. Like, I felt really pathetic anytime I had to ask anyone for anything or mm-hmm. tell them that I didn't feel good, you know. Or I felt, like, so burdensome because I was like, oh, it's me again, just being crazy and sad all the time. It's like, after a while, when you're so chronically sad,
yeah,
you know, after a while, you're just like, I can't tell yeah. people that I'm sad again. Like, what else am I going to, you know. Just like, you know, you feel really isolated and alone.
Right.
And I think that that's the hardest part is like trying to de-isolate yourself.
And with that, we're going to take our next break.
Okay.
Hello, this is Anna Fernat, and thank you for listening to Champagne and Snark. If you are listening via iTunes, I would love to ask a favor. If you could go and rate or review us in iTunes, that would really help us. It helps other people discover the show, and really it helps the show move up the ranks, which will be beneficial to everybody, because then we'll have more champagne fun times. So if you like it, once again, thank you first of all for liking it, and second, go and rate and review us at iTunes. Now back to the show. Hello and welcome back to Champagne and Snark. This is your host, Anna Fernat, and I am in the champagne room today with Maggie Kubley of Celine Neon. We've been talking about sobriety and drinking yeah. sparkling cider, which is honestly a delightful change for a minute.
Yeah.
I've been drinking a lot of champagne lately.
Okay, great. Yeah, we're mixing it up. I'm happy I could do that.
Absolutely fine with this. So we were talking about, we kind of, at the break, we were talking about the vulnerability of coming to a friend or a relative and revealing your loneliness or revealing your sadness. What is that? I mean, like, I guess, what is that like? Like, what is that like to find strength to be intimately vulnerable?
Yeah, it's funny because I think it's just like, I also think it's hard to be like, I really like this, or yeah. like, I'm really excited about this. Like,
yeah.
I think chill has so permeated our culture. You mm-hmm. know, it's like, it's, you know, you feel really vulnerable about really feeling anything other than just like, yeah. it's cool.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I think that anybody who's like, I don't know, I just can't do this, I think it's always really important to remember that, admit, you know, telling somebody that you feel sad or telling somebody that you, you know, are feeling lost or just like overwhelmed, mm-hmm. how much strength is in that? You feel like it makes you weak.
Right.
But it doesn't. It actually, to me, if somebody's saying that, I'm like, whoa, your strength is crazy. Mm-hmm. Your courage is crazy right now. Like, you have my immediate attention, because I'm just so drawn to the fact that you're being so real
mm-hmm.
and you're like living a really, you know, a real life. You're like mm-hmm. really like grabbing life by the balls when you're like, yeah, I'm like really going through it right now.
And I think sometimes being able to live a real life is also like a special talent, because you have to be able to translate the things that are happening in your life, translate your emotions, and understand that you're going through something.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's an elevated experience.
Yeah.
But I think it's a really special experience. And yeah. I mean, that's what I do with my writing. It's like you were kind of saying before, how you're really okay with, you know, telling everything on stage, yeah. and like in your music. And I will say I will be so like taking my heart across the coals, like just all of that out there on Accidentally Sexy. But it's really hard for me to tell a boy in person that he hurt me.
Sure.
You know, but to be like, and then I felt this thing, and this is the bigger theme in my life that it is. Yes. La, 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 la. And it feels very powerful to do that. But the best part about doing something like that is when other people who are feeling those same things, who didn't know who to talk to about it, they see that and they recognize it. It makes them feel better. And you feel like that oneness, which is always really important. And there is a strength to being open in public, because not everybody can do that. Most people can't do that.
Yeah.
But then to then take it to the next level and say something that strength to the person, or that you're really excited about meeting that person, like even those sorts of emotions, it's really difficult. And I think the reasons it's difficult in that specific sort of situation is the person that you're talking to might not know how to translate that yet. You know, I might have done a lot of work on myself, but not everybody's done a lot of work on themselves. So, you know, that's kind of hard sometimes.
It is. And I think, some people are receptive and some people are not. Mm-hmm. And some people are like in the middle, where they may not be able to voice what they're saying, but they understand that like what is coming out of you is very real and very important.
Right.
And they can kind of silently let you know. You know, you've got those friends where you're like, I feel this way. And they are like, they're your friends that are like a walking, talking, like advice column.
Right.
Then you got their friends where you're like, I'm feeling this way. And they're like your stoic friends. And they don't say anything, but you know that they feel you, and you know they're there for you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you're right that some people just can't. I think that some people, and it's not better or worse or anything, but right. some people, you know, it's all about, you know, people's emotionality.
Right.
Some people are like super emotional and they want to go there really deep. And then other people are like, no, like my emotions don't like run my life that much. And
right.
they don't go there emotionally, which is also fine. I mean, right. I know amazing people on both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely, it's weird to be open about your feelings. And I think people that can do it publicly should.
Yeah.
So that those who can't understand their own emotions can maybe kind of look to those people to be like, yeah,
100%.
I'm feeling that. Yes. Thank you for saying that. You know?
I think the world, like that is the beauty and importance of an artist.
Yeah.
Is to be able to be the translator.
Yeah.
You know, like that's our job.
Yeah.
Is to be able to say, okay, this is a mess of human emotions that we all have, but I'm going to be able to tell you how to understand those. And that's the whole point.
Yeah.
And that's like, I think that's a really special and a special and important place in the world, but that doesn't mean that it's not really hard to be that translator.
But I think too, in regards to the other end where you're just having one-on-one with people,
right.
I try to remind myself that like, that is the essence of life. Like two humans saying super real things to each other about their emotion and their lives. Like that is work that is worth doing, because that is like, that's life at its core. When you strip away like image and technology and you know, like social constructs and all that stuff, it's like people just really communicating their needs and like desires and dreams and wants and hopes and things that makes them sad and happy. That is like one of the most basic human experiences that I think a lot of people rob themselves of because they're too, like, you know, it's because it's hard to do and it's very painful at times. And I'm this way too. And I try to remind myself, this is my pep talk that I give myself before I have to have a confrontation with someone. Uh-huh. Like, I'm like, we may get in a fight over this. And I try to, even fighting, like, that is like,
you have to do that. Yeah.
That's the thrill of life. You know what I mean? Like, that is really like some rich life right there. When you were like disagreeing with somebody,
right.
You know, it's like,
and I've recently realized, like, I grew up in a house where we didn't fight. Like, I never fought
with
my sisters.
We're very polite.
And I think that was a problem, honestly. Like, as a grown-up, I look at that and I'm like, I wish that I'd known how to like successfully navigate
yeah.
uncomfortable, yeah. unhappy feelings with people that I love.
Yes.
And as an adult, and this is only like, I'm talking like the last year even, I've been able to have difficult conversations with really close friends of mine
yeah.
and be able to realize, okay, this is going to suck right now. And yeah. we'll be really angry at each other, but you're my friend and there's an abundance of friendship. Like yeah. this isn't just going to go away. I'm not calling you something terrible. We're talking about a discussion yeah. of something. It's not like, you know, and that is a really important skill.
And I'm saying good for you. I mean, yeah. not only is it an important skill, but like, I really do feel like that is like, you know, you're really taking advantage of like some of the most amazing parts of the human experience.
Right.
Because 9 times out of 10, once you have that disagreement with somebody and you work through it, it brings you closer and it bonds you even stronger to that person. You know right. what I mean? Like, it really helps you to build a relationship.
Yes.
And relationships that are built over time and like sustain all those fights and all those like crazy times are like the ones that are most amazing and are so rich, you know?
And I think in order to have, especially like in order to have a fight, in order to say something loving about somebody, in order to whatever, you have to be honest about your own emotions.
Yeah.
And I think that is something I'm really passionate about right now and craving finding those places is or are people that have an honesty about their emotions about themselves.
Yeah.
You know, we're living, I wrote about it recently. Like I feel like I keep running into these situations where I'm coming to the table and I'm like, this is how I feel and this is how I think. And they're coming to the table and be like, yeah, me too. And then they like act in a completely different way because yeah. of it. And I'm like, I'm not asking you to agree with me. I'm just asking you to like be real and honest in how you are living your life.
Yeah.
In relation to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that takes a lot of, it takes a lot of strength because the fear, I think, when we live honestly is that it's going to scare people away.
Yeah.
And maybe it will scare some people away.
Yeah, it but does. Those it does scare some people
but
away.
But those aren't the people that are supposed to be in your life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I'm dealing with right now.
Keep going. I literally have no answers. I'm yeah. going through that every day. And yeah. I think so many people are. And you're right. I'm kind of coming out of a phase where I was really struggling with feeling like I was just too much for people.
Yep.
Men especially. I'm just yeah. like, dude, nobody's dating me because I am like overwhelming. I'm always yeah. sober. I'm yeah. this huge personality. Like I'm like yeah. a lot to like, you know, like I was constantly putting myself in situations or I was constantly experiencing situations. Where I was just like, I am too much. I'm too much.
Yeah.
I'm too much. I'm too this. I'm too that. I'm too that. And it's like, you know, it's easy to say that,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's easy to be like, well, there must be something wrong with me. And I think it's harder to get to a place where it's just like humans are so multifaceted.
Yes.
Like just because, you know, this person, you know, you think they're wonderful and maybe they don't think you're wonderful doesn't mean you're not actually wonderful.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think that it's understanding that like the relationships that you have are so, they're going to just vary so much from person to person.
Yeah.
And I think often I expect it to be like, you're either this to me or you're this to me or you're this to me, you know? And when really it's like, there are hundreds of different things and there's hundred different of kind of like romances and friendships and working relationships that you can have with people. And I think that's a lot of healthier way to think about it rather than like what you're not to them.
Yeah. 100%.
You know,
I think like in just that's in general, that's like in everything in our lives, we should always focus on the thing about us that is the strongest and the best.
Yeah.
Rather than being like, but then I'm this and thing.
Yeah. Just like, dude, you're fine. Like it's yeah. okay. You know, like,
yeah. It's whatever we shine light on is the thing people are
yeah,
going to see.
Yeah. It's so, you know? It's so crazy. And I think, you know, and just letting relationships be what they are.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, just don't force it. Just be in that moment and be, and just do whatever you're doing in that. And I think I always try to seek to understand and explain things that like you really can't know or totally explain until you are years away from them.
Yeah, completely. I think, and that kind of goes back to relationships with other people, but you also have a relationship with yourself. You have to maintain
too. And, yeah. and things that you're like, oh, I didn't even realize I wasn't being honest with myself about this.
Right.
Like yeah. I thought that I wanted this, but now that I see years later, I actually wanted this, you know?
Yeah. And it's, I think that's, you know, something that's really powerful to go through is like beginning to trust the world, to be able, beginning to trust that the ground is always going to be beneath you as you keep walking forward.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can't just sit in the same spot because time won't let you do that.
Yeah.
You've got to, and like being able to say, okay, well, I can try this thing and I can do this thing. And as I keep walking forward, there will always be ground in front of me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's terrifying. But I think that's where your friends come in, you know?
Yeah.
I've had, I've got a friend kind of going through it right now. And when she told me, I was really surprised because I look at her and I see her as a really strong person. Mm-hmm. And I think that she's great. And I think she does great things. And, you know, I told her, I was like, you know, I understand you're going through it. But like, the best part about your friends is like, sometimes when you're in the middle of a situation, you can't see the forest for the trees.
Yeah.
And you're like, I'm lost. I have no clue what I'm doing. And my life is in shambles. And it's nice to have a friend you can go to. And when you tell them that, they're like, actually, like, you're doing pretty good. It's just like, you know, your phone bills do. So you're stressing out and you're like, you know what? That is true. You know, it's like, oh, because sometimes one thing will happen and you feel like it's everything. And it's nice to have your friends to be like, actually, like, you're okay. You got this.
What has been, so it's been 2 years.
Yeah.
What has been the most powerful moment in this journey?
I never feel, so I... Actually, my brother is like a month behind me in our sobriety journey. We kind of did this together. Yeah. And I think actually his 2 year is coming up in March. Maybe he's like 2 months behind me. And I think that I never feel more like, it never really hits me like the just the gravity of all of it never hits me as much as when I'm like making music with Emily and Will. When we're all there together and we're all like just so thick in that amazing thing that happens when you're like birthing this thing into the world with other people, and to be there with them and to be present and to be so clear, that's when it hits me, because I am so thankful. I'm just so incredibly like, and any time that I do feel that, it's just like, I'm just like dropped to my knees, like fucking so thankful that I like had the wherewithal to make that turn off the path I was on.
Yeah.
Cause it's just like, I don't even know where I would be right now. Like, I don't know. We, and Will and I are constantly saying that to each other. It's just like, what do you think we'd be doing right now?
Yeah.
Especially now that we, I mean, him and I have both, you know, we're making so many things right now and we're doing so much. It's just like, we know that none of it would be possible if we were on the road that we were on. But like, you know, just when we're, you know, I think when we are in the studio or we're getting ready to like, you know, like launch something really big and you're on that precipice, it's like, I almost always look around and look at these people in my life and just, I'm like, I'm so thankful for you. I'm so thankful to be here. I'm so thankful to be present, because like I said earlier, like, I really, I never thought I would ever be there. I never thought I would ever feel so happy. Like, I never thought I would be a happy person. I thought I would be just like kind of a sad creep for the rest of my life. And so, to answer your question, I feel the most like it hits. I can't say one specific time, but definitely when I'm doing like really like exciting stuff with Sleet Neon.
Yeah.
We'll usually take, Emily's probably like, guys, quit talking about being sober. Cause I'll always be like, God, I just am so, she at this point, she's probably like, I know, but you know, it'll really hit me. I'll just be like, I wouldn't be here. Like, we wouldn't have this. Like, right. I would have nothing, you know?
Well, I think that's a good, great place to end it.
Yeah.
So cheers to that, which
thanks
is a weird
for having me
to,
on.
But
yeah. Cheers to that.
Do you have any plugs?
Do I have any plugs? I do. Celine Dion is going to be playing at Kohl's on Friday, February 26th, as part of the Chicago Singles Club Fourth Fridays.
Excellent.
It's a free show.
And this is going to come out 2 days before that.
Oh, exciting.
That. Perfect. Yeah.
It's always lit at Kohl's. Like, I love shows there. This is our first time playing Kohl's, so I'm super, super excited about that. Yeah.
Excellent. Where can they find you on Instagram, Twitter?
We're on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook.
SoundCloud.
Hit us up on SoundCloud. We're also on Spotify, you know, Apple. Like, you can buy our Apple. Hello, it's called iTunes. We're also on iTunes. Also on that Apple thing. Whatever you kids are doing these days, your fruity music. And yeah, I mean, you know, iTunes, Google Play, Amazon, all that jazz.
Excellent. Check out Kitty. That's my favorite.
Yeah. Check out our new EP. It's
and then Kitty. I'm Anna Fernat, and I am at AnnaFernatt on Twitter. I'm on Instagram as Accidentally Sexy. I have my new Facebook page for Champagne and Snark, which is facebook.com/champagneandsnark. I know they're all disjointed. Everyone tells me they're like that for a reason. And then finally, you can hear this podcast every Thursday on RSS, iTunes, and Stitcher, and anything else that, you know, pulls one of those podcasts. And I like to end the show with a quote about champagne, and that quote is that I believe everybody should have a bottle of champagne, or in this case sparkling cider, in the refrigerator, because you never know when the next good time will be. Thank you. And now it's time for my blossom moment. If you or someone you know is struggling with addiction, there's help out there. Local Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous meetings happen all around you. To find out more about this, go to aa.org or na.org to find more information. I hope this story from Maggie inspired you and gave you the strength and courage that you need in these hard times. This episode of Champagne and Snark is brought to you in part by Strangeways, a Chicago-based content and production house working in digital media projects, filmmaking, publishing, and broadcast media. For more info about this and other projects, visit strangeways.com. That's strange, W-A-Z-E.com, and find Strangeways on Twitter and Facebook.